Tri-States. This is IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the blind and print handicapped. You are listening to the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Friday, June 12th. This is brought to you in part by DuPaco and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. And here I am, Ken, in my recliner, the driver's seat for the reading of today. And we start at the top of the fold. Plans for new Dubuque school on hold. Plans to build a new Resurrection Elementary School in Dubuque have been put on hold for now. Officials opted not to start construction on the project this year amid uncertainties caused by the COVID-19 pandemic, said Reverend Phil Gibbs, pastor at Church of the Resurrection. However, he said remains hopeful that the construction of the new Catholic school will commence next spring. We're cautiously optimistic in light of the current circumstances, he said. We just want to be respectful of where people are, but also be responsive to the needs of our kids. Parish and school leaders have worked on plans for the new school for more than a year. Officials plan to demolish the wing of the current school, located north of the gym, and construct a three-story building in its place. The new school will house elementary school and early child care offerings. At one point, officials had hoped to break ground at the end of the recently completed school year. That was before the COVID-19 pandemic led to the closure of school buildings, skyrocketing unemployment, and economic uncertainties. During the pandemic, Church of the Resurrection leaders paused their capital campaign to help pay for construction of the new building. The project is expected to cost about $9.6 million, with $3.55 million to be raised through the parish's campaign. An anonymous donor has pledged an additional $2.5 million, and Holy Family Catholic Schools pledged to raise another $3.55 million. Parish leaders continued raising funds during the pandemic, but have not been actively soliciting donations. Even so, the church still has raised more than $1 million so far, Gibbs said. Things are on pause in terms of determining the timing and the approach, and it is all dependent upon the pandemic and the economic situation turning around to be in a more favorable light, Gibbs said. Who knows what's going to happen, but there's no sense rushing into things if there's a sense of hesitancy or if there's some fear out there. The current school was built in 1961. The school is operated by Holy Family, but the building is owned by Resurrection Parish, so church leaders ultimately are responsible for decisions about major building improvements. Resurrection will be one of the three remaining elementary programs in Holy Family this fall, following the closure of Holy Ghost Elementary School and the English-based program at St. Anthony Elementary School due to low enrollment and the potential for cost savings. Holy Family Chief Administrator Philip Borman said officials are excited to see the new school constructed, even if the timeline is different than planned. He said the system has pledged to raise its share of funding for the project, but will wait to move forward until economic conditions are more favorable. We would have liked to have seen the project start as planned, Borman said. However, we're still incredibly thankful that we will be building, and we're hopeful that this continues soon. Project leaders consider trying to break ground on the school this fall because they could have seen potential cost savings at a time when businesses are looking for work. However, pandemic-fueled uncertainties around health, the economy, and what educational programming will look like in the fall made it evident that the project could not go forward this year, Gibbs said. Capital campaign leaders now are waiting for the right time to begin fundraising again in earnest. Gibbs said he hopes the construction of the new school could start next spring, but acknowledged that uncertainty around that timeline still exists. While the project timeline is on hold for now, parish leaders seek to continue reinforcing that the work needs to be completed in the future. If there's any message we'd like to send out there, it's still a project at hand, and there's hope that it'll be done in the near future, Gibbs said. Now, our next piece is Medline readies its new facility amid pandemic. And we have a small inset picture with the caption. It's a picture of a large building, Medline. Medline Industries' new building on Innovation Drive in Dubuque is nearly finished. It is twice the size of Medline's current facility in Dubuque and will allow the company to add hundreds of employees. Staff members at one of Dubuque's fastest-growing employers will never forget the first half of 2020. Medline Industries employees have spent months coordinating the delivery of critical supplies to healthcare providers during the COVID-19 pandemic. The company also is nearing the completion of a 130,000 square foot facility in Dubuque Industrial Center West. The structure is twice the size of Medline's current facility and will allow the company to add hundreds of new workers. Senior Vice President Renee Pape said work on that building is 99% finished. We built our new facility to set us up for growth, she said. We see a bright future in Dubuque. Medline employs 540 people in its 66,000-square-foot customer service center at 7900 Chauvenel Road. The new facility, to which all employees will relocate eventually, has room for more than 900 employees, Poppy said. The completion of the new facility typically would have been cause for immediate celebration. However, the pandemic has forced Medline to take a more measured approach. Plans were to shift gears and move into that location when it was ready, Poppy said. But for now, we are going to focus on keeping our employees safe where they are, and when the timing is just right, we will be moving into the new location. The past 3 months have been a whirlwind for Medline workers. In mid-March, Dubuque employees transitioned from the Chauvenel Road facility to home-based workstations. The relocation coincided with a sudden increase in the need for Medline's services. Not only have our workers moved off-site and started working from home, but they have seamlessly taken care of customers that are in that urgent, what do I do type of situation, Poppy said. As the severity of the pandemic became apparent this spring, healthcare providers throughout the nation scrambled to acquire needed products. Medline facilities across the nation worked together to increase production of hand sanitizer, making hundreds of thousands of extra bottles per week, Poppy said. Meanwhile, the company coordinated the delivery of essential personal protective equipment, such as reusable face masks and surgical gowns. Company officials arranged for such items to be flown rather than shipped from Asian markets to ensure the products arrived quicker. Locally, Medline staff members worked directly with the customers to take orders, coordinate shipments, and track deliveries. We worked around the clock to urgently assist healthcare providers and make sure they could provide care to their patients, Poppy said. Rick Dickinson, president and CEO for Greater Dubuque Development Corporation, still remembers the first call he received from a Medline official. In November 1999, a company leader contacted him to see if Dubuque had space to accommodate about 25 Medline workers. The company opened a facility in Dubuque the following year, and its numbers have ballooned ever since. Medline is now among the 12 largest employers in the county, according to GDDC. For a company like that, coming from the outside into Dubuque and growing at the rate they have, it is something that is very unique in the 21st century, Dickinson said. When Medline transitions to its new facility along Innovation Drive, its existing Dubuque headquarters will be put up for sale. Given the building's current setup, Dickinson believes another customer service center would be the most likely reuse of the building. However, he said, all options are on the table. We certainly hope to see that building filled with another employer that will continue to benefit the community for years down the road, he said. Poppy, meanwhile, said Medline is focused on how the new building will provide a comfortable, supportive workplace. The new structure will feature a cafeteria, a coffee shop, an on-site fitness center, and a multi-purpose gymnasium. A large walking trail around the building will allow employees to get outside and exercise. These things are really something they have earned, Poppy said. We're excited about how it will contribute to their lives professionally and personally. Our final front page piece has a large inset picture of a young person helping someone down in the water. It looks like it might be near the River Museum. And the caption reads, Charlotte Toski, 10, of Dubuque, helps Jared McGovern with National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium as he prepares to place freshwater mussels into Bee Branch Creek on Thursday. Oh, that's the creek building in the background. And our article is Big Boost for Biodiversity. Jared McGovern stood ankle deep in the Bee Branch Creek in Dubuque on Thursday. Slowly, carefully, he lowered into the water a small cylindrical concrete silo containing 30 freshwater mussels. After repeating the process with a second silo, he released more than 500 additional mussels freely into the creek's calm waters, then splashed back to shore with a thumbs up. You have no idea how exciting that was, said McGovern, curator of conservation programs at Dubuque's National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium. This has been a year and a half in the works, and it has just happened. That's amazing. McGovern and his team released 2,500 juvenile freshwater mussels into the upper Bee Branch Creek. Their goal is to increase the biodiversity and ecological health of the waterway, while also engaging the community with the watershed and the mussel conservation process. Workers from the Dubuque County Conservation Board, Iowa Department of Natural Resources, City of Dubuque, and River Museum measured, counted, and bagged the 10 to 15 millimeter long animals from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's Genoa National Fish Hatchery prior to their release. After they were sorted, McGovern released the mussels at intervals along the upper Bee Branch, and 11 concrete silos, each containing 30 mussels, were placed at various release sites so staff can easily find them and measure their growth biweekly. We will be able to use the mussels as indicators of water quality, he said. They are sensitive to changes in water quality, so if we see lower growth in certain silos, that is an indicator that there's something interfering with their growth in that section of the Bee Branch. The mussels won't simply be reporting on water quality, however. They also will alter it for the better. Mussels are a natural filtration system for water, so they can improve the water quality just by their mere presence, said Darren Muring, City of Dubuque civil engineer and Bee Branch project manager. Not only do the mussels clean the water as they filter feed, but they also deposit nutrients and oxygen in the sediments of the creek bed as they burrow, preventing erosion and providing a physical habitat for other organisms. We're trying to incorporate elements into the project that would promote an aquatic habitat, Meering said. Anything we could do to make it be a healthy creek, that's what we've been trying to do. Museum staff will be joined by the students from St. Mark Youth Enrichment Multicultural Family Center and later Audubon and Fulton Elementary Schools in measuring the mussels. We'll be engaging students in real-world conservation, McGovern said. People are the most important aspect of a successful conservation program. The students will participate as part of the City of Dubuque's Beekeepers Initiative. The Watershed Stewardship Program provides volunteer opportunities for citizens of all ages to help with cleanup, monitoring, water quality testing, and more in the Bee Branch as part of an effort to connect citizens with nature and help them engage with their environment. We all have a role to play in keeping our waterways healthy and clean, said Kristen Hill, City of Dubuque Communications Specialist with the Bee Branch Project. Students will help check on the mussels throughout the summer and into the school year. They also will participate in educational programming led by McGovern and Hill, during which they will learn about the Bee Branch, conservation farming, wildlife restoration, Mississippi River history, and more. The more people we get out down there to understand the Bee Branch, its vulnerabilities, and its strengths, everyone's better off, Meering said. They can take pride in knowing they're helping to preserve that creek and keep it a local treasure. Next, we'll turn to news from Dubuque and the tri-states. And at the top of the fold, 10 people with COVID-19 in nursing home outbreak from Edgewood. 10 people at a Delaware County long-term facility have tested positive for COVID-19, officials confirmed Thursday. The cases at Edgewood Convalescent Home are a mix of residents and staff, according to a press release, which does not indicate how many of the cases fall in either category. Facility Administrator Sarah McCool also would not specify how many residents have tested positive when reached by the Telegraph Herald. A press release from the facility states it is unable to share any further specific information, citing patient privacy laws. The State of Iowa COVID-19 tracking website was updated Thursday to include the outbreak at the facility and states that two of those people already have recovered. This marks the first outbreak at a long-term care facility in Delaware County. The state declares an outbreak at such facilities when at least 3 COVID-19 cases are confirmed. The facility has notified residents and their families, and consistent with Iowa Department of Public Health guidelines, the affected residents are in isolation, the release states. The facility is working with county and state health authorities with additional testing of residents and staff as directed by IDPH. Messages seeking comment from Delaware County public health officials were not returned Thursday. We are doing everything we can to ensure we stop the spread of this virus within our facility, stated Edgewood's convalescent home in its release. Our staff and residents are following the recommended preventative actions. We have restricted visitors from entering our facility and canceled all group activities within the building. The release also states the facility has reviewed and updated its infection prevention and control plans and is screening all essential personnel as they enter and leave the building. Staff are wearing appropriate personal protective equipment, and residents have been offered cloth face masks, the release states. We will continue to keep family members up to date so they have the latest information about their loved ones. And now, from the center of the page, senior graduate finds motivation in midst of health complications. And we have a nice picture of a young man sitting cross-legged with a number of plants and things behind him. And it's Corey Hahn of Asbury is a 2020 graduate of Dubuque Senior High School. Hahn was born with a lifelong heart condition. A transfer to Dubuque Senior High School helped Corey Hahn find his motivation to set goals for his future. Before starting at senior during his junior year of high school, Hahn struggled to stay focused on schoolwork. But through finding courses he enjoyed at senior and other experiences, his performance in the classroom started to improve. "Something inside me just clicked, and it felt like things needed to be changed," said Hahn of Asbury. That motivation proved valuable during his senior year when health complications kept Hahn out of the classroom during a school year that was also interrupted by the COVID-19 pandemic. Now he is a new high school graduate looking toward his future in the working world and college. "It's just a relief to know I accomplished high school and I can move forward to accomplish something else," Hahn said. He said finding welding courses he enjoyed at senior and seeing the attentiveness of his teachers made him more comfortable in the classroom. And a job he held between his junior and senior years also helped him realize his goals of earning a degree and finding a good job after finishing school. However, it was around this time that a lifelong heart condition began to interfere with his daily life. When Hahn was born, the left ventricle of his heart was smaller than the right and had to be removed. While he had been largely healthy for much of his life, he started experiencing heart failures and was hospitalized multiple times. About halfway through his senior year, he was put on a list to start waiting for a heart transplant. Those health complications meant Hahn was often out of the classroom during his senior year. "It took a lot away from my time for school and studying and all that because in the midst of school, I also have to learn about the signs that I'm getting sick or the changes in my medications," Hahn said. While medical issues took a lot out of him, Hahn buckled down to stay focused on his coursework. His teachers also were understanding and helped him through. "It just made it a lot easier having people who would understand and would listen to you," Hahn said. Hahn's mom, Chris, said reaching the end of high school is a major accomplishment for her son, who balanced managing his condition with finishing his coursework. "There's so much he has to know besides school, so for him, this is huge," Chris Hahn said. "It's absolutely huge." Joe Connolly, who teaches metals and welding at senior, described Hahn as conscientious and attentive to his work. "He's just a great kid," Connolly said. "He works hard. He'll be able to do anything he sets his mind to." After graduation, Corey Hahn plans to work as a deckhand for several months before likely starting at Northeast Iowa Community College in 2021 to study welding and fabrication. And we have an inset about graduation. Dubuque Senior High School graduation, graduating seniors 388, graduation, seniors commencement ceremony is planned for 3 p.m. June 27th at Dalzell Field. Due to social distancing requirements, graduates will be allowed 4 guests each. The event also will be shown live on the district's website and social media channels. And our third piece, at least a portion of it, 6 more COVID-19 cases in Dubuque County. Each day, the Telegraph Herald is recapping changes in COVID-19 testing. Dubuque County recorded 6 more cases of COVID-19 from 5 p.m. Wednesday to 5 p.m. Thursday. The county's total stood at 377 cases. Clayton and Delaware County each recorded 1. No additional COVID-related deaths were reported in Dubuque, Delaware, Clayton, Jones, or Jackson counties during that 24-hour span. Dubuque County's toll remains at 21. As of 5 p.m. Thursday, the state website reported that 6,557 Dubuque County residents have been tested, up 81 from the previous day. The number of Dubuque County residents hospitalized is 3, 2 less than yesterday. The number of positive cases at Dubuque Specialty Care rose for the second time this week, with the additional case bringing the total to 51. The number of recovered patients, 14, remains the same. And now we'll continue with our opinion page. Our view, quick takes, representing the editorial view and the consensus of the Telegraph editorial board. And our first one at the top, Sunny Crest's wait for tests unacceptable. A common thread on which healthcare experts and government officials tend to agree is that a key element to containing the spread of COVID-19 is access to testing. Additionally, we know that outbreaks in close quarters can spread rapidly, as we've seen in long-term care facilities, inside meatpacking plants, and on ships. That makes it particularly frustrating when, armed with that knowledge, Dubuque County officials have been unable to secure in a timely manner testing supplies from the state following a positive case identified at Sunnycrest Manor. 6 days after officials learned a Sunnycrest employee had COVID-19, test collection kits from the Iowa Department of Public Health still had not arrived. Sunnycrest administrator Chris Kirsch and her staff were prepared to collect samples from personnel as well as residents. The Visiting Nurse Association was on standby, and the kits were not there. That meant it will be at least a week or more before Sunnycrest officials get results of any testing. As Governor Kim Reynolds continues with a phased opening of the state, it becomes even more important that potential outbreaks be identified and dealt with as rapidly as possible. Dubuque County supervisors have worked tirelessly with the healthcare officials to increase testing in the county and to promote positive steps to stem the pandemic. Now that Dubuque needs assistance with a quick turnaround, the state has not come through. It's critical that state officials work with counties and communities to address potential hotspots before they flare. 6 days is too long to wait. And our second piece, a week of peaceful protests in Dubuque to mark the killing of George Floyd in the custody of Minneapolis police was followed by the start of action. A welcome indication that the demonstrations could be a catalyst for change. Monday's Dubuque Human Rights Commission meeting included the discussion of plans for virtual workshops that would address issues including criminal justice, housing, employment, and education as related. Dubuque City Council members agreed to make racial equity a centerpiece of their conversations when they meet to establish city priorities and set goals in August. Instead of rubber stamping the acceptance of a federal law enforcement grant this week, Dubuque County supervisors instead began a dialogue about whether local law enforcement could re-examine its policies. Supervisor Ann McDonough asked that county officials take a step back and examine the tendency to do things as we have always done them. None of these steps is world-changing on its own, But collectively, changing the conversation, asking the questions, and moving in a new direction can be small steps toward positive change. Our third and final piece from the column. Dubuque Community Schools have made some steps in the right direction as well in an effort to address the significant COVID catch-up students will need after losing more than 2 months of instruction to the coronavirus. Dubuque Community School board members on Monday approved an earlier than normal start to the next school year. Students will head back 10 days earlier than originally scheduled, starting on August 14th. The change will add 6 instructional days to the 2020-2021 school calendar, which will allow teachers more time to weave missed instruction into their teaching throughout the year. That's a wise decision. School districts will have to continue to be agile with scheduling in the event of COVID-19 relapse in the fall or winter. Letting students' learning needs discern the pathway is a wise choice. Western Dubuque Community School District board members are poised to address the start of the school year as well. They should follow the same path. Related, watch for record high temperatures right around August 14th. And now we have a few letters to the editor. King's words resonate today from Scott Brenner, North Broadway Road, Apple River, Illinois. Let us all remember what Martin Luther King Jr. said in 1967 in his last book, Where Do We Go From Here? Chaos or Community? Hate begets hate. Violence begets violence. Toughness begets a greater toughness. We must meet the forces of hate with the power of love. Our aim must never be to defeat or humiliate the white man, but to win his friendship and understanding. The ultimate weakness of violence is that it is a descending spiral, begetting the very thing it seeks to destroy. Instead of diminishing evil, it multiplies it. Through violence, you may murder the liar, but you cannot murder the lie, nor establish the truth. Through violence, you may murder the hater, but you do not murder hate. In fact, violence merely increases hate. Returning violence for violence multiplies violence, adding deeper darkness to a night already devoid of stars. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. Pretty powerful words from King. Our second letter. GOP must change leadership course, from Paul Uzel, North Algona Street. Now is the time for the Republican Party to step out and identify itself on the side of the people and the Constitution. The party's leader has flouted the Constitution by brazen political acts. I believe the one who calls for peace and compassion calls us, whether or not your faith is the same, to exercise not division but human unity. It is time for the GOPs to lead by enacting the 25th Amendment of the Constitution. Key to the GOP leadership are both the senators from the state of Iowa, one who presides over the Senate when the vice president is not doing so, the other who stands by the majority leader for every photo op to show her support. She is standing for re-election. It is time for Iowa to speak up and demand the enactment of the 25th Amendment. Failure to do so will inevitably and quickly lead to the complete irrelevancy of the GOP, much as what happened to their counterpart party in the early years 2 centuries ago in the U.S. Then we will have to decide how to deal with a one-party system, that party being the Democratic Party. And our last one, Drivers Could Make Intersection Safer. From Wayne Collins, Mound View Road, Dubuque. Regarding the TH June 4th story about the Thunder Hills Road intersection in Piasta, there is nothing inherently dangerous about this or any intersection. Only inept drivers are dangerous. It is amazing that so many of them do not use their turn signals properly, if at all. You should always start your turn signal well before you slow down and begin your turn or change lanes. On a high-speed road like US 20, get those signals going at least a quarter mile before slowing to exit at those grade crossings. That way, vehicles behind you have a fighting chance to move over or slow down as well. Avoiding a crash is the driver's job, not the responsibility of inert objects like roads. Well, we are a bit past the middle of our reading of the Friday, June 12th Telegraph Herald. This is Iris, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. And I remind you, not only is it Ken in the driver's seat here, but also that we would not have this program if it were not in part the support of DuPaco and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. And now we will continue with today's obituaries. Edward J. Lucan, New Vienna. Edward J. Lucan, 79, New Vienna, passed away Wednesday, June 10th at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center. I want it said of me by those who knew me best that I always plucked a thistle and planted a flower where I thought a flower would grow. Abraham Lincoln. Visitation will be held from 2 to 8 p.m. Sunday, June 14th at Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville. New Vienna, Luxembourg Fire Department will gather at 6 p.m. and the VFW and American Legion will gather at 7 p.m. Visitation will continue Monday from 8:30 to 9:30 a.m. at Kramer Funeral Home prior to funeral services. A Mass of Christian Burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Monday, June 15th at St. Boniface Catholic Church in New Vienna, with burial in the church cemetery, where Edward W. Lake, VFW, number 7736, and American Legion Post number 137, will accord military honors, and the Delaware County Fire Department Honor Guard will conduct Ed's last call. Reverend Tony Cruz will officiate with Reverend John O'Connor concelebrating. Ed was born February 11th, 1941, the son of John Talley and Francis Bruning Lucan. Ed graduated from St. Boniface High School in 1958. He served in the United States Army with the 1st Cavalry Division, stationed in Korea, serving as the chaplain's assistant. In 2008, Ed retired from Lucan's service station, having worked at, owned, and operated the service station for 50 years. Ed loved New Vienna and valued community service. He served on the New Vienna Fire Department for 31 years and was instrumental in founding the EMS services in Dubuque County. He was past president of Dubuque County Firefighter Association and a member of Dubuque County Firefighter Hall of Fame. He was a member of the VFW number 7736, serving as their chaplain and as assisting in the business operations, as well as being a 54-year member of the Dyersville American Legion number 137. Ed's passion for the outdoors led him to initiate the founding of the Tri-County Sportsman Club, serving as president from 1984 until 2018. He was also a charter member of the New Vienna Perch Club. Ed made others around him happy and was made happy by the simple things in life. Bullhead fishing in Minnesota, a rabbit hunt with beagles on Sunday afternoon, and a Schmidt beer after working in the garden brought him great joy.
For many summers, Ed raised and sold sweet corn and enjoyed interacting with the customers that he had. Ed was also known for turning old tractor tires into feed bunks and considered many of his customers to be his friends. Ed was proud to have been an independent businessman and surviving challenges like the farm crisis. Even though he dedicated long days to the service station, he always made time for his sons, traveling to ball games and inventing games in the station for the boys to play. He was a firm believer in letting nothing go to waste, and was proud to have kept a fleet of old cars and trucks running in various stages of repair. Ed was fond of saying, "Anybody can draw a new car. It takes a man to keep an old one on the road." For several years, Ed drove a Jeep Grand Cherokee that didn't have reverse. He said he didn't need reverse, just always go forward. Tom Baxter, Waukon. Tom Baxter, 69, of Waukon, died June 9th. Visitation will be held from 2 to 6 p.m. Sunday at St. Patrick Church. Catholic Church funeral services will be held Monday, June 15th at 11 a.m. at St. Patrick Catholic Church in Waukon. Burial with military rites will be at St. John the Baptist, West Ridge Cemetery, rural Waukon. Martin Funeral Home in Waukon is handling arrangements. Griffin T. Metcalf. Griffin Thomas Metcalf departed this world Saturday, June 6th, at the age of 18. A celebration of life will take place on Friday, June 12th, from 1 to 5 p.m. at the Novelty Ironworks, 333 East 10th Street, Dubuque. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, Dubuque, is assisting the family. Thomas J. Newhouse, Walford, Iowa. Thomas Joseph T.J. Newhouse, 66, of Walford, Iowa, passed away following his battle with cancer at his home Monday, June 8th, surrounded by family. Tom was born on June 29th, 1953, to Gilbert and Virginia Flynn Newhouse in Dubuque, Iowa. He moved with his family to Cedar Rapids at a young age, where he graduated from Cedar Rapids Prairie High School in 1971. In the mid-70s, he began his adventure as a truck driver. Being a free spirit, Tom moved to Oregon in the mid-80s to try something new. While in Oregon, Tom went to school to become a heating and air technician. When the western wind blew Tom back home, he worked as an HVAC tech for a short time until climbing back into the truck. In the beginning of TJ's 40-plus year trucking career, he traveled most of the Iowa 48 as an over-the-road driver. The last 26 years of his driving career were with ADM Trucking out on Cedar Rapids, which allowed him to be home every night. Tom retired from the trucking July 1st, 2019. After 9 years together, on September 27th, 1997, at St. Joseph Catholic Church in Key West, Iowa, Tom married the love of his life, Pamela Wagner Klein, and was welcomed as family by her three children. Together, Tom and Pam raised their family in Cedar Rapids until recently moving to their home in Walford. Tom enjoyed camping, canoeing, Jeeps, tinkering in his wood shop, and remodeling his home. His favorite pastime was being on his bike. His motto was, "A good bike ride fixes everything." Most of all, Tom loved being with his family and friends, spreading his infectious smile. He was affectionately known as Mr. Gadget. Funeral service is 4 p.m. Saturday, June 13th at the Ponderosa Ballroom, Walford. Visitation is 1 to 4 p.m. Saturday at the Ponderosa. Please be respectful of social distancing. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the family or dogs forever at 809 Rockford Road, Southwest, Cedar Rapids. Online condolence may be sent to the family at www.newhousefuneralservice.com. Katie I. Peterson, age 77, of Dubuque and formerly of Asbury, passed away at home on Wednesday, June 10th, surrounded by family. Katie was born on December 19th, 1942, in Kankakee, Illinois, the daughter of Hazel and C.D. Van Arsdale. The family moved to Moline in 1945, where Katie was raised. She graduated from Moline High School in 1960. She attended Western Illinois University and was a member of Alpha Sigma Alpha sorority. She married her high school sweetheart, Ron Peterson, November 13, 1960, and they enjoyed almost 60 years together. They moved to Dubuque in 1970 along with their children. Katie retired from Five Flags Center in 1996. She loved the noon hour euchre games with her co-workers and was often called a busher, which she denied. She also loved to play bridge, always on the lookout for a slam. Katie enjoyed traveling with Las Vegas and Caribbean cruises among her favorite destination. She was a diehard Cubs and Hawkeyes fan who rarely missed a game on TV. Attending the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra concerts was also a favorite of Katie's. She loved pets, especially cats, and leaves behind Lexi and Libby, who will dearly miss her. She was a member of the Westminster Presbyterian Church. All are welcome for visitation to take place from 12 to 2 p.m. Saturday, June 13th, and a service beginning at 2 p.m. at Eaglehoff, Siegert, and Casper Westview Funeral Home and Crematory, 2659 Kennedy Road, officiated by Pastor Lauren Schellebarger. In accordance with current guidelines on public gatherings, social distancing and mask use is kindly requested. A special thanks to the staff at Hospice of Dubuque and No Place Like Home Senior Care for their outstanding care and compassion for the last several weeks. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to Hospice of Dubuque, American Cancer Society, Westminster Presbyterian Church, or a charity of choice. Online condolences may be left at www.eaglehoffsiegertcasper.com. Princeton R. Gillenwater. Princeton R. Gillenwater, age 5, of Dubuque, was called home suddenly as the result of an acute asthma attack at 11:28 p.m. Saturday, June 6th at Weaver McKenna Hospital and University Healthcare in South Dakota. To celebrate Princeton's life, family and friends may visit from 12 p.m. noon to 1 p.m. on Saturday, June 13th at Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Maine. To honor Princeton's life, funeral services will be held immediately following the visitation at 1 p.m. on Saturday at Bear Funeral Home. Princeton was born September 16, 2014, in Dubuque, Iowa, son of James and Lakia Gillenwater Singleton. Princeton attended preschool at Westminster Presbyterian and was excited to be starting kindergarten in the fall. He was full of energy and loved to dance and play outside. Basketball was his game of choice, and as boys will do, he liked to roughhouse with his family and friends and pretend to be his favorite superhero, Spider-Man. He never allowed his asthma to slow him down, but did take time to sit still and watch his favorite cartoons. Princeton brought more joy to this world in his short 5 years here than some provide in a long lifetime. We love you, Princeton, and will miss you more than words can possibly express. Princeton's family will also gratefully accept your kindness and support through online condolences left at our website, www.bearfuneralhome.com, as well as greeting cards or memorials, which can be sent to Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, Dubuque, Iowa, 52001. Attention, Princeton Gillenwater family. Robert L. Cottrell, Robert Lee Cottrell, 80 rather, of Dubuque, passed away on Wednesday, June 10th, at home, surrounded by his family. Services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, June 13th, at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Burial will be in Dubuque Memorial Gardens with full military honors accorded by the Dubuque Marine Corps League. Visitation will be from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Saturday at the funeral home. A live stream of the funeral service will be on Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory Facebook page. He was born July 12, 1939 in Durango, the son of Raymond and Mary Lesline Cottrell. Bob was a U.S. Navy veteran serving from 1959 to 1963 and was in the reserves until 1965. Bob worked for John Deere in Dubuque for 32 years, retiring in 1996, and was a member of UAW Local 94. He was the family historian and an artist. He was an avid Chicago Cubs and Iowa Hawkeye fan and was a stock car sponsor. He enjoyed going out to eat, playing softball, and bowling. Marilyn M. Ellis. Marilyn Marie Ellis, 89, of Postville, died Wednesday, June 10th at Good Samaritan Society in Postville. Visitation will be held from 3 to 7 p.m. Sunday, June 14th, at Schutte Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Postville. A graveside service will be at 11 a.m. on Monday, June 15th, at Postville Cemetery. Doug Ernst, Bellevue. Doug Booter Ernst, 60, or Tudor, rather, Ernst, 60 years of age, of Bellevue, passed away Tuesday, June 9th. Funeral Mass will be at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, June 13th, St. Joseph Catholic Church in Bellevue. Family will greet friends at from 8:30 to 10 a.m. at Hockman Funeral Home and Cremation Service prior to Mass. Complete arrangements are pending. Danita Blackburn, Fenimore. Danita Blondie Blackburn, 63, of Fenimore, died June 8th. Visitation will be held from 1 to 4 p.m. on Sunday afternoon, June 14th, at the Larson Family Funeral Home in Fenimore. Celebration of Blondie's life to immediately follow at BD's Eagle's Nest with food and fellowship. And with the passings and the sadness of such age spans, we also must remember that we have our new arrivals. And this Friday, we have lots of them, beginning with Tuesday, June 9th, Bessler, Ryan and Brittany Schmidt Bessler of Farley, Iowa. A girl, Unity Point Health, Findlay Hospital, Dubuque. Hartig, Wes and Allie Hartig of Dubuque. A boy, Mercy One, Dubuque Medical Center. Culper Ludovici, Danny Culper and Jake Ludovici of Holy Cross, Iowa. A boy at Mercy One. Winders, Andrew and Monica Winders of Dubuque. A girl at Findlay. Wednesday, June 10th, Korfman. John and Alyssa Korfman of Dubuque, a girl at Findlay. Einsweller, Adam and Kayla Einsweller of Galena, a girl at Mercy One. Rob, Jeff and Claudia Robb of Dubuque, a boy at Mercy One. Sutter Ross, Kaylee Sutter and D'Angelo Ross of Dubuque, a girl at Mercy One. Thursday, June 11th, Lane. Curran and Jennifer Lane of Menominee, a boy at Mercy One.
I'm going to take just a couple of minutes of quick takes because we are running out of time. We have officials say policing reforms already are on the books. A bill introduced in the Wisconsin legislature would require that law enforcement adopt measures to reduce the use of force, but Southwest Wisconsin officials say such requirements are unnecessary as they already are included in the department's existing policies. Another interesting piece, Asbury Council weighs in on goat and chicken issues. And the gist of the article is that goats can now be used, a firm owns goats, they can be used to clear pasturage and steep hills and such, and there are a number of requirements required, and the cost is about $900 a year to have goats on the property to eat up the vegetation on your slopes. And chicken coops can be a little bit closer to houses. If that interests any of you about chicken coops and you're in Asbury, look into that. Western Dubuque School Board is going to consider an early start. They're expected to reset the school district's calendar for next year, and they're going to have a public hearing on the proposed calendar on Monday, June 15th. And then they're expected to vote on the proposal. And finally, the Dubuque County Fair announcement is going to be delayed. Officials won't announce the fate of the 2020 Dubuque County Fair today after all. Earlier this week, they said they were going to tell us about it. The fair is slated for July 28th to August 2nd, but the Telegraph Herald was told that the board had several things come up and will meet again on Tuesday, June 16th. The plan now is for a final decision to be released by the end of next week. Please note that the Iowa State Fair was canceled on Wednesday due to concerns with the virus. And additionally, four counties in the Telegraph Herald coverage area have canceled their fairs: Crawford, Grant County in Wisconsin, Joe Davies in Illinois, and Clayton County in Iowa. Well, that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Friday, June 12th. This has been IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the blind and print handicapped, and it has been brought to you in part by DuPaco and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. As always, I am grateful to have some listeners out there, and this has been Ken in my recliner down in the downstairs of my home. Until next week, take care, be safe. Bye-bye.